Well, definitely not getting dehydrated this retreat. That's good. I was. So, do you think Amanda's coming? She's probably coming. It's all right. She'll come. Just shut the door, maybe. That's all right. Australians are excused. We expect them to have kind of loose behavior. Big party people. Okay, let's get to part three. Transforming adverse conditions into the path. So let's just read it. When the container and the contents are filled with evil, transform adverse conditions into the path to enlightenment. Apply meditation to whatever circumstances you meet. Apply the four preparations as the supreme method. Well, we've been talking about this the whole time, except for the last line. It's just saying that the container and the contents is just when my mind, you know, or when the situation. I mean, they always have this flowery language, but so it's like when my body and mind, or yeah, that's really what it is. And I wouldn't use the word evil either. I would just use the word delusion. Because evil has too much of a kind of a Christian kind of blah. But when so it just means, you know, when delusion arises, or when adverse conditions arise, you know, we're going to transform them into the path to enlightenment. And I think that's basically what we've been talking about most of the time we've been here, is how we transform these conditions. And we've kind of talked about two things. It's like when it's coming from ourselves, that's when we apply the, you know, we have to have the awareness and know the antidotes. But when it's adverse conditions, you know, say you're in a relationship you can't get out of, or you're in a job you can't get out of, or you're living in a place that's not healthy, or, you know, your mother is difficult, or whatever the situation you're in, we have to find a way to make it work for us rather than just being depressed. And like I said last night, don't let the conditions defeat you, is what Tsongtsar said. So, and I think in a way, you know, I mean, I'm sure that the intention of this is to apply some kind of Dharma remedy, but there are also like mundane remedies too. I mean, this isn't part of the teaching, but, you know, we're talking about things like, you know, going swimming or taking a break or whatever, you know, feeding yourself well. And I mean, don't leave those out, you know, look for the most practical things, you know. Lama Yeshe always used to say, be practical, you know, just look around and see what you can do to create a better situation for yourself so that you will be able to work with the emotions that arise in response to that difficult situation. And then when we get to the rest of it, there's a lot of ways of how we can transform those situations. But, you know, mostly it's just working with your mind and realizing that, you know, either you work with antidotes, you know, if you're jealous, and if you're in a jealous situation, you cultivate, rejoicing. You know, if you're in a situation where you're jealous of somebody, something somebody has, you just think, wow, it's so great they have it, you know? Or someone's got some situation better than yours, well, just look around and find something to be gratitude about in yourself, you know. If you're, like, a lot of times, sometimes people will come to retreats and saying, I've got this crush on this guy and it's just horrible, you know, just completely, I can't stop thinking about him and he's not interested in me, or maybe he's married, or, you know, what do I do about that, you know. And so what do you do about that? You can't just say, I'm not going to have attachment. I mean, you can try, but that's not really going to make it go away. So you have to figure out ways, you know, like meditate on love and compassion, you know, loving yourself, or having compassion for that person, or just recognizing the I, recognizing this is karma. I mean, it's not going to make it go away, but the more you can talk to yourself about it, it might take a little while, and just realizing, oh, geez, you know, here's this karmic imprint ripening with this person, and what can I do about it, you know? And I think, to me, I always turn to Tonglen, you know, just sit there and do Tonglen with yourself, in a sense of compassion and care. It's okay, you know. You got a crush on somebody. But, you know, what can you do about it? You just try to look for, it's like Carl was saying, you know, usually beneath anger, there's a hurt, you know. And usually beneath a crush, there's a deep-seated need that you have. I mean, not always. Sometimes it's just karma, you know, just bang. You know, you don't know why, you know. But if you can kind of, you know, just turn the thing inward, and you can apply that to any circumstance, you know. Try to look for the deeper reason of why that's happening. And also by doing Tonglen with yourself about that situation and giving yourself what you do need. And even in that case, if you give yourself a sense of kind of affection and love, then you're not so dependent on getting it from something from outside yourself. I know as ordained people, you have to do that all the time. You have to develop a sense of self-love. But even if you're not ordained, it's really helpful to do that, because then when you're in a relationship, they're much better, because you don't need anything from anybody. You're just there because you appreciate that person, you love that person. And so then when they don't give you your needs, you don't care. I mean, because that's usually what causes conflict in relationships, is needs aren't getting met. You know, I have an expectation of this person. He's going to do this for me, you know. She's going to do this for me. But if we can learn to be more emotionally free, you know, and fill our... That's why Tonglen's so wonderful. If you can learn to fill yourself up with everything that you need, because, like I said, it's all in your mind anyway. You know, that whatever, you know, she wants from that person, it's just a hormonal kind of thing. You know, you can work with it, give it to yourself. I mean, it takes time, but it's definitely something worth cultivating, because then we're not dependent on other people for our sense of well-being and our sense of, I mean, it's nice to be nurtured and have affection from other people, but it's possible to live without it. It's possible to be, you know, full when you do these practices. That's one of the things they do. That's one of the benefits of refuge, is feeling that affectionate care for yourself, you know. Because if you can feel it for somebody else, you can feel it for yourself, which is why I often start with Tonglen, of thinking of somebody that you love. Because if you think of somebody you love, you can kind of get that warm feeling happening, and then you can give it to yourself. It's hard to just, you know, at least for most of us, you know, it's unless you're like really narcissistic. And even narcissism, I think, isn't true self-love. It's usually coming from a sense of lack, which is why you have to be so full of yourself all the time, because actually deep inside, you don't like yourself, you know? You see like rock stars and movie stars, you know, they're so like overwhelmed with taking care of them, you know, like me, I'm so great and wonderful, but if you really hear about it, they're some of the most insecure people in the world, which is why they have to like blast their name everywhere and do all the stuff they do. And that's an extreme version of it, but we're all like that to a certain extent, you know. So we can talk about it later, because there's lots of ways. So when it says apply meditation to whatever circumstances you meet, that it doesn't mean you have to sit down and meditate. It basically means, you know, apply the Dharma to whatever circumstances you meet. And then applying the four preparations is the supreme method. Okay, what the four preparations are, and this is in the Lama Chopa, because there's a bit of the Lama Chopa prayer that covers the seven-point mind training. The verses after taking on, you know, may all the suffering of sentient beings ripen upon me right now, and may I give every place all beings in bliss, you know. And then what comes out of it afterwards are these verses about the four preparations. So it's pretty, we've talked about them too. I talked about last night that the three main components of Dharma practice is, you know, purifying the karmas that you need to purify, and purify the karmas that are like that don't take you to enlightenment, and accumulate the karmas that will take you to enlightenment, and making requests. Remember last night I said you have to steer the boat where you want to go, you know. So the request is like, I need to train enlightenment for all sentient beings. But you can also make your request of something more immediate, like Beth, for instance. You know, Beth, I don't know if she is, but if I were Beth, I'd be going, you know, may I accumulate the funds to do my retreat, you know. Because if you have a good motivation, there's nothing wrong with asking for things for yourself. You know, because you need them to do what you need to do. A lot of people think that Buddhism means, oh, I don't take care of myself anymore. You know, because it's all about everybody else. But that's a mistake. So, you know, we always make the great request, or like the three great requests. Remember we did them this morning. The three great requests are, may I and all sentient beings gain all the realizations and be free of all the wrong views and be free of all the obstacles. That's basically what we want. But you can be very specific in your requests. You know, what obstacle do you need to be free of right now? You know, what is it that we're working on? You know, is it forgiveness that I need, or is it self-esteem that I need? Is it just money that I need? You know, what is it? You know, it's okay to ask for those things with the right motivation. And then the fourth one is making an offering to the local spirits. And I didn't pass out a little prayer, but you know, the Tibetans believe that there are spirits all around all the time, and every place has like local spirits, and most indigenous cultures have spirits around. And I know that Europeans used to until the Christians, yeah, got rid of them all, and they're probably still there, just a little bit neglected. So what I like to do, I'm not doing it here, but one of the things I do in my house that makes me feel comfortable, and I could give you a copy of the prayer, but you can make up your own prayer. I just light a stick of incense every day, and I go and stick it out in my garden, and I offer it to the local spirits and say, please accept this stick of incense. I'm just here to be your friend. Please don't cause me any harm. And so please enjoy. That's really all you need to do. Some people like to put a biscuit out, but I don't know. I don't think it's good to feed the mice sugar, you know. yeah. So I like to offer incense, and also because incense creates the cause for pure morality, which is something we all need, you know, pure behavior, good conduct. But there are very extensive pujas that are offerings to local spirits that you can do if you're interested. But, you know, I think it's a good thing to do. And it can't hurt. Because, you know, Tibetans say a lot of illnesses is caused by spirit harm. So if you make offerings to spirits, even, you know, this anger thing we were talking about yesterday. I was in a relationship for a long time with someone who, what you would call hair trigger anger, where it's just the slightest little thing, boom, you know. But we both noticed, because he was aware of that, and he didn't want to have it either. And of course, I would go right into it myself. And so we used to always keep incense around, because a lot of that anger and a lot of those things, even having a crush on somebody, can be caused by a spirit that's hanging around in your aura that's causing you to think this way. And actually, it was Kitty Sintrimshe that told me to do that. He said, you know, when I went to him and told him I couldn't practice thought training, he said, well, first you just told, gave me, you know, a pep talk, keep trying, you know. But then he also said, make offerings. When you're getting into an argument, make offerings to the local spirits. And so, because it would often happen in the car when we were traveling, going somewhere, because he's a really good person, but he had bad PTSD from a really abusive childhood, and that's all it was. And he learned a lot of methods to help him. But one of the things we'd do is, as soon as it would start to happen, rather than get in an argument, we kept a little incense in the car and would light, stick it in, and believe it, and it would just dissipate it completely, you know. So whether you believe in spirits or not, even if it's just something that helps you, you know. But I know, like, Tibetans, they will, like, if there's a newborn baby in the house, they incense everything before it can come into the house. They incense people, they incense food, they incense just to keep any spirit, because the incense makes the spirit go away. And I know in my retreats, you know, you get very subtle in retreat, and you notice these little obstacles that can come in. And I would do that with the food. You know, someone would go shopping for me, and I'd always incense the food before I'd bring it in the house. And I could feel a difference. So I think making offerings to spirits is not a bad thing. I think I just invite you to experiment and see, you know, if you're in disbelief about it. But, and if you are, that's okay. But if you're willing to give it a try, you know, it's an interesting, kind of makes life richer, you know, knowing that there are other beings around and they can help you. Especially, you know, there's Fintorn up there in Scotland. They kind of did a lot of work with their little, you know, garden spirits and stuff like that. So that's enough about spirits, I think. So we'll, can we just get up and go do Qigong? We sort of had a break. Do we need to have another break? We've only been back 15 minutes, so. So let's go do, is that right? Oh, no, we're supposed to have a break till 11:45. Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm not very good at all this time stuff. And that's not true. I do my best. So what should we do? We have 15 more minutes. We usually have a break for 15 minutes. So you want to just keep going a little bit?
Stories.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I kind of wanted to go through the next bit. But does anybody have a spirit story to share? You got a spirit story to share? Yeah.
The house we live in is an old coaching inn. It was built in 1760.
Wow, cool.
And although I don't feel spirits myself personally, yeah, but lots of people, because we have guests, we've got 3 letting rooms, so we've had lots of people.
Yeah.
So they feel the spirits and, you know, something like that. I asked Geshe, I was here before Geshe Sampson.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about spirits, and I asked him to come and bless the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though, yeah, I do believe in spirits, but I don't feel them.
Yeah.
And my husband, completely non-believer, so I had to sort of say to him, look, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But the difference, and nobody since then, none of the guests have ever talked about ghosts, yeah, or spirits, or what's, yeah, happened in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I definitely feel these exist, you know. And I think we talked about that yesterday. Sometimes when you go by a tree, you know, there's a special tree, you feel this tree, you know. It's where spirit lives in that tree, you know. And I often can feel that. And not all trees, but certain trees. And it's usually the big, beautiful tree that lives on the land is where the local landlord lives, the local spirit who kind of like is in charge of all the spirits. It's like the king spirit, you know. And so it's good to make offerings there. You know, you can take your stick of incense and put it right in front of that tree, you know.
We had one at the Priory, you know, when we were up there. And
yeah.
It was always called the Naga Tree.
Yeah.
And there was always lots of offerings put by it. And
yeah.
People would, you know, go there, would go talk to the tree. Yeah. They were having a bad time.
Yeah.
Amazing tree.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think there's been spirits around here. People have noticed spirits here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially old houses. So it's good to do these, you know. I mean, even the Catholics do a lot of things with spirits, you know, the whole, what do they call it? Exorcism.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to hear another story then?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the stuff of today. Yes, it's storytelling day. One of my teachers, Geshe Kenrab, who taught, was my first real Vajrayogini teacher, the first commentary I received, and he was sent to Canada. He was from Ganden Jhansi. And he was sent to Canada long time, probably in the late 60s, to Montreal by His Holiness, because the Canadians were very good at bringing in Tibetan refugees in the beginning. And so there was a refugee community in Montreal. So he went to be like the pastor, you know, for the... But they weren't interested in it. You know, all they were interested in was Losar and Sakadawa, which was like New Year and Easter, kind of, you know. And so he had plenty of time to meditate, and I think he got on the dole, you know, and gained realizations right there in Montreal, you know, doing his practice, mostly Vajrayogini practice. And you could tell he had realizations. He's one of those people you just touched his skin, and it was just so blissful, you know. I mean, he was just so blissful. And he used to come to Milarepa Center, and 1 year he'd do Vajrayogini retreat, and next year he'd do Yamataka retreat. But anyway, he was only 64, and he had this, and what happened was, somehow, I can't remember how Gary found him, because he really didn't have any students, and Gary, who was actually Leonard Cohen's roadie, met Geshe-la, and decided that Geshe-la was something very special, and decided to kind of, instead of, he changed from being Leonard Cohen's to Geshe-la's and sort of created a Dharma center for him. And they bought a bank, an old bank in Montreal, and Geshe-la meditated in the vault. That was his room. It's just so quiet, you know. So,
a cave.
Yeah, it was like a cave. So this was about, I hadn't met Geshe-la too many years before then. And this, I think this was about 1993 or 94. And so by this time, you know, there was community. You know how the Vietnamese are practicing Buddhists. So the Vietnamese people would come to the center more than the Tibetans. And then there was a big Western bunch of, you know, Canadians, Caucasian Canadians, probably mostly, you know, French Canadians and Scottish Canadians. And... there was a woman named Joan who lived there, who was very devoted to Geshe-la, and a woman named Sarah who lived there, and Gary. And there was a girl in the Vietnamese community that was definitely possessed by a spirit. They said it was just like the movie The Exorcist. You know, this voice would, I'm going to take this girl. It was like that. And they all heard it, so it wasn't like something they imagined, you know. And so Geshe-la, being the bodhisattva that he was trying to exercise that spirit. And so he was doing these different pujas and stuff, and he would always be really exhausted, you know, because the spirit would be wanting to attack Geshe-la. And so one afternoon, she was about 12 or 13, and Gary was there, and he heard the spirit say, I'm going to kill you, you know, really attack Geshe-la if you don't give me this girl. And so they left, and Geshe-la was quite tired, and he told Joan, I mean, I think Sarah lived upstairs, and he told Joan and Gary not to leave him that day. It was very dangerous. They shouldn't leave. And so that evening, I think Gary got a phone call, and he had to take his mom to the hospital. And then Joan's son called. He was in jail, and she had to go bail her son out of jail. So Geshe-la was left alone. And before they left earlier in the evening, Geshe-la invited Sarah into the room and asked for a massage. And Geshe-la said that, and he had this big bruise in his heart. And Sarah said, what happened, Geshe-la? He said, that's where the spirit bit me. The spirit attacked me. And so he hadn't told, I mean, Sarah wasn't as close as Joan and Gary. So Gary and Joan were both gone. And when they came back, Geshe-la was dead. He died of a heart attack at 64, a healthy man, you know. So even, you know, Geshe's have to be really careful about these spirits, because there are, you know. So anyway, that's not such a happy story, but that's a story about spirit harm. And they all are convinced that that's what happened to him. You know. So, yeah. So we need to be careful. And, you know, the Tibetan doctors and lamas and say that most of the people in mental institutes have spirit harm. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's something definitely that psychologists could look into if they could suspend their scientific view, you know. I mean, because just because you can't see things doesn't mean they don't exist, you know. And there's so much empirical evidence of the existence of spirits, you know. So it is, I'm not saying for you to be, you know, afraid, you know, but it is helpful to make friends with your local spirits. And also, if you're going to build a house on new ground, before you dig the ground, the Tibetans have a special ceremony they do, because there's also an earth spirit, you know, the earth, they call the earth goddess. So that's probably what we think of as Gaia. It's not like that the earth is the goddess, but there's a, well, something, anyway, there's some relationship between this goddess Senma and the earth. And so before you dig in the ground to build your house, it's important to do some kind of ritual. Even, I mean, you don't have to do the Tibetan one, but ask permission to dig the earth, you know. So, and I particularly, my view of this whole global warming thing and the hurricanes and stuff is that the Nagas are just totally pissed off at all the mining, the pollution, because they say, oh, I'll tell you another story, another great spirit story. Because, and that's what's going on. It's just this huge backlash of the spirit world saying, okay, if you humans are going to do this to me, I'm going to fight back. In fact, I'm going to fight back so bad, I'm going to get rid of you. You know? And I think that's what's going on. You know? So, and I know that Kirti-Sensei Rinpoche, before he died, he went all over the world, even to Antarctica, doing Naga Pujas. You know? And I mean, I've done some of that myself. Doing, going around doing pujas. But, you know, especially when you look at the huge mines, you know, these huge mines. And if you think about what's going on in Canada, have you ever seen what's going on with the oil tar sands in Canada? Oh, man, the tractors that they're using are like the size of 5-story buildings. They have these giant tractors that they're just digging up the earth, you know. And then they squish the oil out of the sand, and then they're going to build these pipelines to send it all the way down to Texas or whatever it is, from way up in northern Canada, you know. It's horrible. And all the fracking that goes on, you know. All that stuff is just like, they don't, the spirits don't like, imagine the water spirits in the ocean with all that pollution, you know, the plastic. What do they say? There's like a piece of plastic the size of Texas, or is it that big?
It's the size of France.
The size of France in the ocean floating around. You know, not to mention what happens to all the birds when they eat the, they die, you know, so like the albatrosses are all dying because they're eating plastic bags and, you know. But anyway, I'll tell one more spirit, then we'll go do Qigong. This is some people at Chinrezig Institute, Chinrezig in Australia, in Brisbane, near Brisbane. This is back in the 70s even, I think. I heard this story. There was this couple there who were like, you know, holistic doctors, Ayurvedic, not maybe, some kind of holistic doctors. And they'd got these ulcers on their feet, like these big pussy sores. And they got so bad that they had gone right all the way through to the bottom of the foot, top of the foot, these big sores. And, you know, they did everything they could, you know. I don't know if they took antibiotics, but I don't know what they did. But they did all they could. And finally they went to Geshe La, to the Geshe there. I think it was Geshe Tinlay. And said, well, can you give us any help? And he said, well, where do you live? And they said where they live. And they said, well, is there any water that goes through where you live? And apparently they were very sloppy people. You know, they didn't keep their... They just... I mean, back then, everybody just lived in teepees or Camp Dao. There wasn't much of any buildings, and so they just had a camp where they just had garbage places. You know, they weren't very clean. He said, go back and clean up your camp, make it really clean. And then they discovered when they went back and were cleaning their camp that the water line went through their camp. And they cleaned up their camp, and their sores healed up. Because Nagas don't like dirty stuff. They don't like, you know, dirt in the water. So pollution in the water is not a good thing. So that's why it's right in here, you know, make offerings to spirits, because it can be the cause of some of the obstacles that we experience, you know. And a lot of what these Geshe's are trained in, Geshe Samten, and they know how to do pujas for spirits. But also, I know that Beth's asked him to do a Naga Puja here, and he doesn't want to do it. You know, I've done a Naga Puja here. I didn't get any harm from it. But I like to do Naga Pujas. I seem to have a connection with Nagas. And they're beings that are... Lama Zopa describes them as almost like human spirits, you know. But he said that you have to think of it like, you know, if you moved into a territory that would belong to a dog, you know how dogs are really territorial, you need to make friends with that dog, or he's just going to bark at you and bark at you and bark at you forever, you know. So when you go into a place, you need to make friends. And even if you live in a flat, you know, you can, usually flats have a little window, you know, you have a little potted plants or something, you can still put your stick of incense out there. It doesn't have to be a whole stick, but just a little stick, you know, and it just... Here you go. Let's be friends. You know, it's very simple.
We had a Naga around the old building of Jamyang when it was in North London.
Yeah.
And someone was doing puja. Someone you know, actually, so I can't say. And something happened, and the Naga came in the room.
Yeah.
And he threw the doji, absolutely terrified, and hit the poor Naga on the head. So, really,
yeah,
it was a story of the time.
Yeah.
And once I was with my Geshe-la, he's passed away now, and we were having soup. And the soup was here on the table. I was in his room, and the next thing was on my lap. And he started hysterical laughing, and he said, "Oh, the Naga is a bit cross with you, something." Or just joking. I can't remember what he said. The Naga is playing games.
Mm.
And it was literally on the table, so I hadn't gone near it. It just came because we hadn't blessed it. Mm.
So one thing that I like to do, I mean, I don't do it here so much, but if I go into a new room, because I know this is, lamas do this. When they go into a place to stay, they light a stick of incense and go all around the room, even under the mattress and under the bed, and they just clear everything out, you know, just to kind of like clear it out of, you know, all the cultures do that. You know, the Native Americans have smudge sticks and people are smudging, and I'm sure the Aboriginals have some kind of thing. And I think that, you know, we've really done ourselves a disservice this whole age of enlightenment and science. You know, I mean, science is great. I'm not knocking science. But I think that the scientists need to be a little bit open-minded to there can be other forms of existence. And I know the church had to do that just so they could be the dominant force, you know. So they killed all the druids and witches in Europe. But I think we lost something with that, you know. So it's interesting, if you're interested, just to go back. I mean, there's a resurgence of druid activity in England, you know. And apparently druidry was outlawed until like 1965 or 19, you know, you actually couldn't practice a druid. But I have a friend who was a Buddhist for many years, and now she does druidry as well. And she said the Archbishop of Canterbury has actually always been secretly a druid.
You know Roy Gillett?
Yeah.
He's a senior druid.
Yeah. So I don't think it's
Buddhist.
Yeah. I don't think there's a contradiction, really, you know, because I mean, because their rituals and everything are very similar to Tibetan Buddhist rituals. And I think if you just add refuge and bodhicitta, there's no reason why. You know, the reason my friend got involved in it is because she's a professor at Naropa. It's a Buddhist university in Colorado, and a Native American was there for a while, a very like holy man, you know. And they got to be good friends, and he looked at her one day and says, "I don't understand you know, you European Americans, you know, you're so involved in everybody else's spiritual tradition. You know, what's wrong with your own indigenous spiritual tradition? So she came back and went to Glastonbury and, you know, took a journey to Avalon and, you know, started studying. And she's very happy because it resonates with her DNA, you know. So we do have our own very rich Celtic tradition here. And it's just something to think about. Anyway, let's go to Qigong.
Yeah, so even the churches built their churches on the
yes,
top of...
Yes, they did that everywhere. Sites. They did that all over yeah. South America, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and Mary is Bridget and, yeah. you know, all those kind of things. So and a lot of the saints, you know, a lot of the, like, Irish Catholic saints are just new names on the... Mm-hmm.